Welcome to Trillions. I'm Joel Weber.
And I'm Eric Balchunas.
Eric, I am not alone in my love for you. I have to share my love with you with other people. And at Bloomberg, one of the people I have to share my love with, thank you, is Scarlett Fu, who you co-host a show on Bloomberg TV with called ETF IQ.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, Bloomberg TV, the show's on every Wednesday at 1 p.m. It's only a half an hour a week, but it is weekly. And like you, I mean, I'm the in-the-weeds person, and you guys are a little more mainstream.
You're the Tony Romo.
To your Jim Nance.
Yeah,
exactly. That works well. You know,
and Scarlett's like a kindred spirit of mine, though, because she's not full. She's not an ETF junkie. You're like full ETF.
Absolutely.
She's like half ETF.
I've pulled both you guys in pretty hard. Like, there's some things you guys will pop out with, but I'm like,
she's giving in a little bit.
You're three quarters nerds, I'd say, at this point. Yeah, you're not like me and Todd or you know, that gang, but you're getting there. But, you know, what's interesting is the show is nearing its 100th episode. And
congratulations.
Thank you. And there's a lot of crossover with this podcast, the show, and also my research. My main job is writing research. But those, it's funny, like the guests on the show will say something and it will get my brain going. And then I might use it here or in the research. And there's this nice synergy between all of these activities. But ETF IQ, I think, is a big part of it. And I think it's different than this show because, like, if I say something really crazy right now, we can just tell Magnus to edit it out. But on TV,
you're live.
Yeah, if you drop like an S bomb or something, it's that's it.
So in the spirit of that, we're gonna have Scarlett come on today and actually talk about some of the learnings that she's had about ETFs and also some highlights from the show.
Yeah, I mean, Scarlett is so good at broadcast. I can tell you from somebody who's not in the broadcasting world, and neither of us are, but she is, and it's a lot harder than it looks. But most broadcasters like Scarlett make it look easy, the good ones. And so it has been a pleasure working with her. She's been very generous to just even let me hang around and be on the show every week. And we thought we'd go over some highlights of the first sort of 100 episodes that stuck out to both of us.
I get to watch it from time to time, but I've never actually asked you guys to populate your favorite segment. So I'm really looking forward to this one.
And as we get in some of these clips, just know they're from all different segments, but the way the show's kind of designed is starts with like a look at the flows, and then the A block, the first one is a guest who's sort of like how to play something. Bloomberg News is on there, so a lot of the guests we've had on are also on that show. Then we have passive aggressive, which is where we look at the shots fired and the active and passive battle. And then the last segment is called the drill down, where we take one ETF, throw it on the lab, I give my take, and then the issuer's on there to sort of defend and get into, you know, the ETF and why it's valuable.
A little ETF dissection there. This time on Trillions, Showtime with Scarlett Fu. Scarlett, welcome to Trillions.
Thanks. I've been looking forward to this because I always hear about Trillions from Eric. On Mondays, we have our conference call for ETF IQ, and he's always making references to Trillions. So now I get to be a part of it.
For the record, I'm still waiting for my invite to ETF IQ, but, you know, I won't hold that against either of you.
Well, now that we've done this, I think that's the next step.
Okay, all right. Yeah. No, don't. Let's keep it this way. But So Scarlett, how did you discover the ETF? Because you've been at Bloomberg longer than I've been at Bloomberg, I think. And how did this come to be, that you got an interest in ETFs?
Well, I like to use a number of different functions to track what's going on in the stock market. And one of them is Most US 4. And it looks at the most actively traded securities by value on any given day. And if you don't screen out anything, if you don't filter out anything, a bunch of ETFs are always at the top. And, you know, around the financial crisis, it would be the same ones, the ones that bet against the financials and double inverse against the financials. And it was always kind of fascinating to me that there were these ETFs and that they were so heavily traded. And I was convinced that someone was losing a ton of money. I'm sure they were. So I always had this idea that there's a lot more going on in the ETF world than we discussed. And every once in a while we'd talk about it, but most of the focus was on individual companies. And at some point, it seemed like we're missing the boat if we didn't talk about ETFs and we only fixated on one or two companies.
And how did you discover Eric?
How did I discover Eric? That's a really good question. At some point, I think I gave him a call to find out how some ETF worked. And then he very patiently
started talking. That's just like, oh, let me tell you about myself.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
He's not going
to
laugh.
He's on a roll.
Yeah.
Look, I remember, I don't remember the first time we met or what happened, but I think I remember going on with you and Alex. You guys used to host a show in the afternoon, or
Alex Steele.
Alex Steele. And you guys were both pretty into it. Like, you would ask me back, because unless you're covering a company, it's very difficult to get asked on Bloomberg TV unless you're Fed person or a company person. If you cover funds, it just doesn't come into their minds that often. So I was, you know, kind of the squeaky wheel, and some were more receptive than others to having somebody come on and talk ETFs. I think when ETFs had like when there was a real problem in the market, I think sometimes that's when you could really see, because I would come over the trading volume. And I think going over, like you said, the trading volume started to sink into people that, well, these things trade more than Microsoft, you know, we really should incorporate them. So I think I kind of maybe sold you a little, but you were very nice to ask me back. You know, I think you even said come back weekly at one point.
You also did a lot of work for the segments.
Eric remembers exactly what you said. So you start having Eric on. What did you learn about ETFs?
That it's a huge, vast world, and there are a lot of crazy acronyms, and people say it in a way that you don't expect.
So when did that become normal for you? Because there's this thing about the ETF thing that I felt like was like, all these things I didn't understand and didn't know. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, maybe I'm on the other side and I know more than I thought I knew.
Yeah. When the acronyms start making sense to you, and when you can reel them off, and, you know, Eric has his three amigos, right?
What are the three amigos?
SPY, VU, and what was the last one?
Oh, let's test your nerddom here.
SPY, VU, and God, what is the last one? I can't remember.
IVV.
IVV, yeah.
So three S&P 500 ETFs. So there's only three. I knew you were deeper in than you thought the other day when she goes, it was some kind of a, I think it was the price competitive
ETF.
The price setters ETF. She goes, this is a lot like Moat.
Ooh.
And I'm like,
see,
you know.
Yeah, you're just dropping it.
Yeah.
Dropping the knowledge.
Yeah, you're just dropping it like it's hot.
And also what's really amazing about Scarlett is, especially in the B block, which is called passive aggressive.
I came up with that name,
that's
by the way.
Really,
yeah, it's so perfect. I know. And it's so perfect about passive people coming on there's an aggressive undertone. But everything sticks to her brain, even minute things, and she'll just figure out a way to put it into this perfect sentence that comes right back out. And it's an amazing thing to watch.
Decades of TV training at work.
Okay, so let's go through a few of the different moments that you guys have had on ETF IQ and contextualize them so that there are some takeaways.
So the first one you picked, we each picked about four or five. So
yeah.
You picked Ed Lopez talking about ESPO, which is the esports ETF. Why'd you pick this?
Well, because thematic ETFs are fun and they're what makes sense to people. It's hard to explain a multi-factor ETF to someone who doesn't know what ETFs are. But if you tell someone, hey, there's an ETF of that trades like a stock, and it's made up of all these companies that engage in or are in the business of esports and video games, people can get their head around that. It's like, oh, it's a mutual fund, but it trades like a stock. Oh, okay, that's interesting. The thing with this, of course, is that, you know, as a parent of two boys, and Eric, you can relate, you know, you see how much time your kids spend on video games, so you're thinking there's definitely huge business prospects here. If you can isolate this segment of the market and just make it its own product, this thing will take off.
You know, I think we're going towards an interactive media, or this idea of a metaverse where people get their social entertainment and entertainment in general. There might be a perception problem, but a lot of the advisors that we have talked to, they have clients that have kids, and they have kids themselves that are playing video games. And so the idea really resonates with them.
And also interesting on this one is a recurring theme, which is trying to figure out when a product should work and doesn't, and and vice versa. So that's where that came from, because the video game ETF has just been an incredible performer, but the assets haven't followed like with robotics and cybersecurity.
The performance is there and the numbers are massive. I mean, I looked this up before I came on because I spent a lot of time prepping everything so that I don't sound dumb or look dumb on TV or on podcasts. The video game industry in 2018 was worth $137.9 billion. The global film industry is worth $136 billion. So video games is bigger business than global Hollywood, but we don't treat it that way. We don't talk about it that way. This is serious money. This is a serious business. And yeah, it deserves a couple of ETFs.
Grow, right?
And the biggest complaint I've heard on Twitter from tweeting out questions of why is the most advisors say, I just can't have something with video game in it on a client statement. That's why we asked Ed that.
They're embarrassed about it.
Yeah. Career risk. Career risk of advisors, as you can tell, drives a lot of our content.
It's a common theme.
Yeah. Speaking of esoteric and kind of unique theme products, the next – I picked this one, which was John Bogle. We had him on –
The late, great Jack Bogle.
Yeah, rest in peace. We had him on, And he obviously talks a lot about passive when we had him on. But I picked a clip here where he kind of talks about some of these wacky theme ETFs. And it's fascinating. He knows these things are launching. Like, these are some really tiny products. And he was aware of this. This was maybe a year ago.
And then when you get into ETFs and their rapid growth, it's become kind of a, well, certainly become a marketing business where new ideas, you've seen the new funds that are coming out. We now have one that is, let's see, short retail and long electronic marketing.
Yeah.
That's, talk about a time of the, a product of the times. And we've got the Republican and the Democratic ETFs.
I think you watch our show.
We've got the drinkers ETF, the distillers. And where it ends, nobody knows.
I love that he dropped the drinkers and distillers. That's the whiskey ETF. The fact that Bogle even knows that exists is fascinating because he is a legend, and he's that. That's also interesting insight into just how
like how closely a, he watched it,
yeah,
though, right?
He did, never lost a step. Every time we interviewed him, he was acute as ever.
So sharp whenever we talked to him. Yeah.
And of course, he invented the index fund. He wasn't a fan of ETFs, so the fact that he knows all these obscure ETFs, including whiskey, which ended up folding, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it shut down later on, is pretty amazing. My only regret about that interview is that we had all these technical difficulties. And, you know, Jack Bogle sitting in some room in Vanguard in Malvern, Pennsylvania, and the audio kept cutting out. So we started the conversation, then we had to stop it. We had to go to commercial break. We had to come back, and we started the conversation again. And then he disappeared again. It was a little bit of a technical snafu.
This was our third show or something, and I've been done segments, but I've never dealt with something like this live.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we had to do something. So you just started asking me about the Democrat-Republican ETF, which was
right
in the news.
Yeah.
And we just shot the breeze on this for about 3 or 4 minutes just because something had to get filled. Then he came back. Then we put Kathy Wood somewhere in there. The whole show was a bit disjointed, but Tim Andreacci fixed it in post-work. I think it looked pretty natural when you saw it later.
Yeah, the whole thing with live TV is that you kind of have to tap dance until someone tells you what to do. And the people who tell you what to do are in the control room, and they're trying to fix everything, and they're talking to the directors. And until then, you just keep talking.
What's the secret to tap dance?
You have to have a good co-pilot. So, you know, Eric and me up on the set, that was not a problem. We could talk about something, anything for hours, as long as you just keep going.
He used to tell me the same thing.
I sense some hostility.
Okay, next.
Next I picked was Kathy Wood. We had her on the podcast recently. She is probably the guest we've had on the most.
Yeah, how many appearances?
Remember on SNL when Tom Hanks was on and he called the Five-Timer Club? And
yeah, Alec Baldwin was on more, though, I think.
Yeah, this was back in the 90s, though, before Alec Baldwin did all those.
Showing our age.
Yeah. So I think she might be a four-timer. Like, she's been on a lot. And the reason is because she knows how to say things that she's just good on TV.
And provocative.
And provocative. And her product is a hit. You know, that helps. But, you know, to me, she's embodies what you want out of a guest. I picked a clip of her calling Amazon deep value.
We believe if you look at our portfolio and you do a correct analysis, a long-term time horizon, discounted cash flows, that we actually are a deep value portfolio. I know that sounds crazy, but given the opportunities in these innovation platforms and the kind of growth they're going to generate during the next 5, 10, 15 years, we think that market is not pricing our stocks even now efficiently.
You know, I shouldn't have just said, I should have said, what?
That's kind of your version of that. Like, usually I can do the mapping, and you definitely reacted more than you did on that. I mean, anybody would have.
She called Amazon a deep value stock, which I don't think I've ever heard anyone do.
I mean, but it speaks to, I think, Kathy, who can make really bold things and then sort of back it up with her performance.
Well, the interesting thing about Kathy is that, and Eric and I were talking about this earlier, she's a bull. She's an unabashed bull. But it's hard to be a bull, and it's hard to sound smart when you're a bull. All the bears sound really smart, right? Because you're poking holes in people's arguments. But if you're making the case and you're speaking with conviction, and you're enthusiastic and optimistic.
You get invited back to ETF IQ?
That, if you're articulate. But also, it's easy for people to say, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And, like, tear you apart.
In markets, the market's going to go down eventually. And it's a tire win for the naysayers. And it's a weak place to go, in my opinion. And no one ever comes back and says, hey, you said the market was going to go down, and it's now 5 years later. It's up 100%. My opportunity cost for listening to you is a lot. Nobody ever writes that article and hits the naysayers over the head with that. I don't know why opportunity cost is left. But I agree with you. It's harder to be a Kathy Wood. Other thing about Kathy that's interesting to me is, and we talk about this a lot, if the person is at the top of the food chain of the company, whether that's a one-person shop or Bogle at, like, you know, thousands of employees, they're the best guests because they do not have anyone to answer to. It's the mid-level. They come in and you can see the lawyers in their head as they're answering a question. That's
See the PR people on the sidelines.
Yeah, they're literally on the side. So that's what makes Kathy also good is that she's running the shop there and is very much looser with what she's saying.
She can say whatever she wants. No one's going to stop her.
Next up we have – this is a good one. Remember XIV we've talked about? We had the maker of XIV, Nick Cherney, on the show 2 weeks before XIV imploded. And I'm proud to say we handled it with a lot of caution. We used it in the drill down. We talked – we showed the drawdowns. And then here's Nick answering Scarlett's question about, you know, how safe is this product?
So it holds up.
It should hold up.
It does,
yes.
I mean, okay, well, I wouldn't have picked it if it
didn't. I'll be the judge of that.
Nick, how dangerous is this ETF going to be when the VIX spikes and stays high?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, selling volatility, as Eric mentioned, is designed for trading. It's certainly not a buy and hold strategy. If you want to look back in history, you can really the last real volatility event we had was 2011. And since then, it's been pretty unexciting in the vol markets. In 2011, shorting VIX futures with a daily reset, you would have been down about 70%. But even if you'd bought at the peak just before that, you're up about 700% despite that drawdown. So there's very significant drawdown risks in shorting volatility. But as Eric mentioned, there's quite a significant premium that comes from rolling those futures and being willing to sell that.
2 weeks later, the Eagles win the Super Bowl and XIV goes away. That
You were out of work that day.
I did. I took the Monday off after the Super Bowl because I was gonna. I was up till 4 a.m. and I wanted to watch all the sports shows to just relish.
And then you woke up and something happened.
Yeah, I started to get a call from, I think Luke Kawa emailed me to see if I could comment. I was like, what's going on? And then the whole rest of the week was like all hands on deck. I did get a lot of TV asks that week because that's the good news about some of those implosion, you know, high,
right.
You know. I mean, XIV did exactly what it said it was going to do. It had the termination event written in there. You know, just because something goes down doesn't mean it's bad. I think sometimes people associate that. That said, an ETF is so easy to access. You just hit buy.
Mm-hmm.
And then now all of a sudden you own this highly complex strategy. That is why XIV is why we came up with the rating system. So we think XIVs are okay. They just need to be rated R. Then everybody can kind of feel for what they're getting into. But that's part of the argument there.
Is XIV the ETF that your dad bought?
No. that was T-VIX. That's T-VIX. Nick Cherney's product also.
Okay.
That bet's on...
Your dad have a T-VIX tattoo yet?
No. I mean, poor...
You should have a red circle
poor
and a
bank
bar through it.
Yeah.
T-VIX has the opposite problem. On that day, it did great. It was probably up 60% or something. But every other day, it just bleeds money quickly.
Okay. And your dad had one of those.
Yeah, he bought and hold it like an idiot. And I told him not to.
Yeah, very clearly, Nick Cherney said this is not a buy and hold investment.
Next up is John Davi, who is a we've had him on a couple times. Now, he's the perfect A block guest. He's what they call an ETF strategist. Advisors and ETF strategists invest in ETFs. So we have these issuers on all the time. And of course, they're just pitching and pitching and pitching.
Mm-hmm.
He comes in and all he does is pick ETFs. So he goes through. He's like a, you know, you ever go to the video store? Editors, the employees picks.
Mm-hmm.
These strategists will come on with products that are way beyond SPY and IWM, and that's why we like having them. So they can talk macro about like, oh, the Fed, and then they can work in the product stuff at the same time.
He and other strategists are the only ones who can like spit out names of ETFs and acronyms the way that you can. Others may not be able to do that. They can do it for their own ETFs, but you know, if you bring up other ones, they might scratch their heads a little bit. Also, John Davi, by the way, told me his cousin is Robert Davi, who is one of the Fratelli brothers in the Goonies movie. So,
what?
Yeah.
Whoa. Which one?
Oh, my God.
Not Joe Pantoliano.
Oh.
Yeah, the other guy.
Yes.
Yeah. The tall
like
guy.
He looks like him.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. That was, see, this is some of the conversation you have before the show starts when the guest sits down.
Can we figure out a way to do a Goonies episode about ETFs? I mean, we got Data. Jewels. Yeah, totally. There's a little organ in there. It's filmed on the Oregon coast. I can come up with this. We can do this.
Yeah, that's that movie was filmed in your backyard.
There's an anniversary.
Wait, really?
I'll figure it out. Oh, yeah, it's Oregon. Yeah, that's where I'm from.
Oh, I love that movie. I watched it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm embarrassed to say I watched it maybe 3 times at the movie theater.
It holds up.
All right, let's hear the clip from John.
So I think, you know, inflation, you know, on the margin is rising. This is a call that we had earlier in the year. And if you look at the New York Fed inflation gauge, you know, it's been ticking up. And so Comm B is basically a third towards energy, a third towards precious metals, and a third towards agriculture. So right now, commodities, you know, we're in a period where we're in backwardation, so it's positive roll yield. So couple that with historically commodities have had positive skewness. So, you know, if there's a bad corn season, you know, corn kind of explodes to the upside. So different from equities, which have like, you know, negative skewness.
Yeah.
So, you know, we think that they're a play on inflation. They're very uncorrelated to equities, certainly, you know, against bonds. So I think, you know, they work well in a multi-asset portfolio.
And when you heard him say Comm B, he's not saying Calm B. He's saying COMB is a ticker. See, that's where he nerded out.
I was impressed there. I was like, whoa.
I actually call it Comb because it's spelled COMB.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
See, that can be confusing that all you ETF experts call it different things.
So
she's right. I think it's a lesson that you should dwell on a little bit of like, you know, you're speaking in a language that the rest of the world doesn't always understand.
This is why both of you are good to mix it, to balance it out.
To be works bosses.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I definitely go in the weeds quicker.
We keep you normal?
Yeah, on the highway.
Yeah.
We were talking about how ETF strategists like John are the perfect A-block guests because they kind of set the scene and they can talk about what's going on.
And then you have to unravel it.
But it's also a challenge to get these guys on a lot of the times. Eric can attest to this because the FOMC, the Federal Reserve, meets on Wednesdays every 6 weeks. And our show airs on Wednesdays as well. Our show is at 1 p.m. The FOMC announcement is at 2 p.m. So we have to avoid talking about the Fed and what it's going to do every 6 weeks on our show. And how do you avoid talking about the Fed, the central influence on everything?
It's like not talking about God.
I ship a weekly magazine, Business Week,
every
Wednesday afternoon.
You nod knowingly.
Yeah, I know the pain that you speak of.
Also, this comes into play with the charting. So like when John speaks, I get tickers he's going to cover and I put, you know, John's top 5 ETFs and Comm B is right up there to help people understand and sort of map out what he's saying. That's so the elements are a crucial part, and that's painful to make, but it really helps, I think.
Eric is on top of all of that. He's like spitting out acronyms left and right, and Tim is trying to keep up with him.
Yeah, you expect a
well, I usually try to pick a chart or two that is going to wow the insiders, like a Nate Geraci or a Todd Rosenbluth. Something that just would be like even amazing to an analyst.
Your goal is to get Todd to live tweet us, isn't it?
Yes, and he will.
Not really.
It is.
I've learned to like it.
We notice when he doesn't live tweet us.
Yeah, it feels a little emptier, I gotta say.
Like, where's our big fan?
Todd's been a great guest on Trillions,
too.
He makes it fun, I gotta say. He's very animated and very good about it. But like, and then some other charts are just, give me something that's simple that somebody who's, I don't know, in Florida and retired can just like not be completely lost with. Okay, next up is we have the Asolas. This was really, I think, sometimes I'll kid with Scarlett and saying, you went Mike Wallace on them, where she goes like 60 minutes. This was, we had these people who track 403B plans, which teachers use. And I think we were first. Nobody's had them on TV. And then Barron's wrote an article a couple weeks later about this topic, which is blowing the lid off of how teachers are getting screwed over by these annuities.
Why would you have a 401k plan and a 403b plan with completely different rules? It makes no sense. The principle is to accumulate wealth for your retirement, correct? So how could you accumulate wealth if you're paying 3 or 4% in fees? It's virtually impossible after inflation.
This is a common theme on the show, but this was an extreme case. I mean, it's funny. Sometimes we'll talk about flows going to a fund because it's 2 basis points cheaper. Mm-hmm. Now, he's talking about 300 basis points. And you forget that the advisor world is definitely tuned into those bips, but most regular people, a lot of them, are definitely paying
a lot.
Set it
and forget it, and they don't realize it.
Absolutely, and that's why this thing is probably in the second or third inning only, in my opinion.
And he was in a unique situation because he was a former teacher. Before he was a teacher, he traded FX, so he clearly understood how markets worked. He understood how fees worked. Then he went to become a teacher, and he was looking at all these 403B plans and thinking, this is insane. I can't believe that they're trying to sell this to us. And there's, 60 to 70 vendors coming to teachers and saying, buy mine. And no one knows how to do it. So teachers would ask him, and he took a closer look at it, and he was saying, this is crazy. Yeah. This is highway robbery.
Yeah, we're the perfect victim here.
It almost reminds me of those commercials you see. How would you like to make 10% a year with no downside risk? Mm-hmm. Those are how those are pitched.
This one was just interesting and to so many people because a lot of my colleagues came up to me afterwards and said their spouse is a teacher and, you know, they would come home with these 403B plans and not be able to make sense of it. And, you know, we finally laid it all out there, why it's wrong, why everything that goes into it is flawed.
Okay, next up, Scarlett, you picked this one.
This is Jamie Catherwood. He is a millennial. He's very active on FinTwit. He's a financial historian by passion. He worked, I think, at Gallagher at the time. He's now at O'Shaughnessy Asset Management. He actually got his job at O'Shaughnessy because he was active on Twitter and hooked up with Jim O'Shaughnessy.
I think he found an opening. People are so caught up between like 87 and today.
Yeah.
He tracks stuff that happened in like 1687 and figures out ways they are relevant today. And no one was doing that and it seems fresh and original. And he's kind of carved a niche out as the historian guy.
Okay. What did he have to say?
He's talking about passive investing and how it goes all the way back. The roots of it go all the way back to medieval Italy.
And Jamie, what about liquidity? In your essay, you mentioned there was an iron chest with three different locks. So liquidity was an issue back then.
Yeah. So for this Unity Creates Strength Fund, once you bought shares of the mutual fund, those could be freely traded on a secondary market to other investors. So that was liquid. But the underlying securities, the actual bonds that the fund was invested in, those were held safe in an iron chest with three separate locks. So if ever an active decision was to be taken, three separate commissioners would have to come together, agree on the, you know, sell decision and unlock at the same time. So to me, rather than a quant fund, the fund represents an early kind of bond index fund because there's so little room to maneuver and make active decisions.
Wow, that's awesome.
It is, you know, indexes every now and then change, but they do take that level of, so that is just such a visual thing to think of this three lock box.
Yeah, and we're only going to get it out if we all three show up with our special key.
The amazing thing about all of that was no one called it a mutual fund. I mean, he referred to it as mutual fund because he said it's like a modern day mutual fund. But he went back in time and like went to some database and figured this all out and writes these long essays about it. And he also had the ancient roots of active investing as well. So he's got a whole series of this.
I love the tech involved too, of like going to the locksmith. So you're going to make this thing. And you're going to do it one way, and then a different way, and a different way. And the locksmith's like, whoa!
Not going to ask any questions. I'm just going to do it.
Yeah. Also with Jamie, he, what is he, 24, 25? I don't want to...
He graduated from college maybe less than 5 years ago.
He is easily the youngest guest that the show's ever had. And, I mean, just trying to have tomorrow's stars on today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a show on MTV back in the day called 120 Minutes. And it was on remember that with Dave Kendall?
Yeah.
It was on Sunday nights from like 10 to 12. And this is like maybe the late 80s, 89, 90.
Did they play new wave music?
They played early alternative, like The Cure.
Yeah, or, New like, Order,
yeah,
Depeche Mode.
All that kind of stuff. Yep. And then when grunge broke, that became mainstream. So I kind of feel like the ETF industry definitely attracts younger people. A lot of new hires go there. And I also think that, you know, a lot of the people who are making these products, as more assets come in, they'll probably get more stature. So I feel like we are trying to catch them earlier.
So we're going to be 120 minutes?
Yeah, we're only 30 minutes. Hmm. I know, we need another 90.
Yeah, Tim is going to rip out his hair when he hears about this.
Okay, who's next?
Next is what we try to do once every 6 months, which is get a big, like, A-list guest. And Scarlett deserves all the credit here.
Howard Marks.
Yeah.
Ooh.
We got Howard Marks double two blocks. So he was like A and B.
And who's Howard, just for people who don't know?
He's a very well-known investor, very well-respected, very good track record, very, very smart, writes these really easy-to-understand investor newsletters that lays out what he's doing, why he's doing it.
And he's a hedge fund manager predominantly, right?
Yep.
So, and he's a billionaire, I believe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like they all are.
Right. So we're talking about somebody who doesn't really need ETFs, but he wrote about them a couple times. And he, you know, had some issues with passive in general, called it autopilot. And then he's also talked about HYG liquidity, which has come up over and over. But when now Howard Marks says it, it makes, you know, the Financial Times, Bloomberg, people write about it.
Pay attention.
So we had him on and we asked him about passive investing.
Okay, newsmaker, let's see what he had to say.
They're good for investing. And I think that if you and most of them have low fees, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to invest in the kinds of things that the ETF invests in, then I think it's a good vehicle for you. The issue, Scarlett, in my opinion, the main issue is liquidity. I think that people turned to ETFs and away from mutual funds because with a mutual fund, you can only trade at the end of the day and at the prices set at the end of the day. With an ETF, you can trade anytime. So it's easy to say, oh, it's more liquid.
Mm-hmm.
It's more flexible. I can do more things. And that should be true. But on the other hand, that's a should.
So he brings up this thing about ETFs being very liquid, and some of them track holdings that don't trade every day or are less liquid. And this liquidity mismatch is a constant recurring theme. And we've addressed it head on. And then we do this thing now because we can't get two people like on Fox News to just like argue.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to do that, by the way.
I don't think that adds any value.
Oh, I'm sorry. Would love anyway. So because we can't get people on like together arguing, we'll take the clip of like Matt Tucker from BlackRock.
Mm-hmm.
And play him talking about why you have nothing to worry about with HYG and get hit Marks to react.
Yeah.
Then when the next BlackRock person's on, we'll play Marks's clip. That's the closest we can come to try to getting the debate in real time.
Yeah. No. This is one of the limitations of a 30-minute show. I mean, if you're going to have an argument or a debate, that's going to take a good 15 minutes and there's half your show right there. Actually, more than half because we have commercials as well. But yeah, this whole idea of liquidity.
It's everybody's favorite knock. It is like
how many times have you talked about, Joel?
I think I figured that out like within the first sort of month of putting my head in the ETF space. It's like, what's the knock? Oh, liquidity.
Right.
And HYG. I've heard this argument before.
If you want to sound smart, just bring up liquidity and HYG.
Yeah, it's like literally like if you find yourself in a room full of ETF nerds, just be like, you guys worried about liquidity right now?
And it's logical. It's like, you know, Wall Street invents things that blow up all the time. But time and time again, we've had these crazy awful sell-offs and the ETF does fine and starting to turn a little. People start to say, actually, maybe they add liquidity. We had
Krishna Mamani
and Aaron Brown from AQR.
Mm-hmm.
Both came on and said, actually, at least you'll get a price in an ETF.
Yeah.
You may not like it, but it's going to trade. And so I think it's turning a little, but I don't know. I don't see it going away anytime soon either.
I want to go back to what you're saying, which is how to sound smart in a group of ETF nerds. Presidian.
This is real. Ooh, what's that? What is
non-transparent active wrapper?
Oh, wow.
What do you think of that?
That is the biggest one-up I've ever had.
Just drop that in the room and be like, Presidian, discuss.
What's happened when you've done that?
That will make you the hit of the cocktail party.
It's a little too nerdy, but because you want to warm up to that point.
Ooh, so you gotta be careful with that because then the people flee from you a little
bit. They're a little bit like, wait, why are you asking me this?
Yeah, that's like you can be like, you know, 15 minutes into a conversation, and then it's like, oh, well, I just did myself a favor and ended this conversation.
Yeah, but I mean, that one's another one that we talk about quite a bit.
Because Presidian is how Active is hoping to turn the tide, and that's obviously a huge debate point. So this stuff doesn't come up a lot on the rest of the network here and there. So might as well dive into it. You got 30 minutes, so we'll go into, you know, how can Active make it? Because normally when they have an Active manager on Bloomberg Television,
they're picking stocks.
They're just talking about what they think of the Fed and the market. And here we're going to ask them, like, what do you think of the Presidium model? Are you going to use it?
Yeah.
What do you think of ETFs?
You just added value to this episode of Trillions.
Thank you. I try.
All right. Next up, we have Wes Gray, who is a PhD out of Chicago, smart guy, ex-military guy, but plain spoken. And his ETF, QVAL, is deep value. I mean, he holds like mall stocks, right? We're talking P of like half the S&P. And so we asked him how it's like to try to sell this to advisors.
Well, it scares advisors because if you look at the performance of, say, QVAL last year, it got absolutely destroyed by the S&P. So if I'm sitting here as an advisor and I'm showing them this weird ticker called QVAL and how it underperformed the index by whatever, I don't even know, 10, 20 points, they're going to be like, you're an idiot, you're fired, right? Where it's much safer to own something that essentially closet index and has very low tracking error and it doesn't really ever deviate too much from the S&P, but I can still tell the story to my client, oh, we own value, we're cool like the other guys. But most people just realistically can't do, or really they can't own QVAL. It's insane, career suicide almost.
What he just said explained so much of the questions you have in flows and assets. Like, why would people buy a mutual fund that basically gives you the S&P and mm-hmm. is very close to, it's called closet indexing? That's why. Career risk of advisors is the answer to a lot of the questions where the flows don't really seem natural. Mm. And not only was that an honest answer, most people would come on and say, yeah, advisors should use QVAL. He's like, it's career suicide. Actually, I heard some people later go, actually liked that I got interested in the product because he was so honest. Reminds me of George on Opposite Day, like just saying the opposite of what you should say. So I actually think that might work for him.
I liked it because his backstory is fantastic. You said he was a former military guy. He was in the Marine Corps. And we asked him about how he went from being in the military, or how does he have the intestinal fortitude to ride out the pain in years where QVAL does really badly. And he gave such a great answer. Being a Marine is about being different and engaging in things that suck. If you can do that with a lot of discipline and outfight the enemy, you can win over the long term.
Okay, we got a kicker. Who's the last one?
It's what?
So at the end of every episode, we make these little videos that almost seem like commercials, but we just make a 1-minute video called, and this was your idea too, there's an ETF for that, because I think a non-ETF person is probably blown away time and time again where you're like, there's an ETF for that?
This was from when Eric used to come on Alex Teal and my show, and he would preface things by saying, and by the way, there's an ETF for blank, blank, blank. And it always kind of stuck in my head that they were always coming up with these ridiculous ETFs, you know, video games, which we've discussed is not crazy at all and makes total sense. But, you know, why not make this into an actual segment where you can say, wait, did you know there's an ETF that tracks space companies, even though there aren't any publicly traded companies that dabble in space?
Of all those videos, I have my favorites, but the one I picked was for the Global X Millennials ETF, MILN. And the reason I picked this one isn't because it's my favorite or anything, but because I asked someone in production to pull the download hits on all the videos, because every time we do a clip, it gets put on the internet. Which ones have people like clicked on the most? And after all we just went over, all this hard-hitting journalism.
The Mike Wallace moments.
The millennial video is the most clicked on video.
Okay,
so
I want to hear it.
The Global X Millennials Thematic ETF trades under the fitting ticker MILN. The fund tracks U.S.-listed companies exposed to spending categories relevant to the millennial generation, those born between 1980 and 2000. The index is based on consumer spending data, consumer behavior, technology, and demographics. MILN is weighted heavily in the internet and retail sectors. It includes names from Amazon, Intuit, Facebook, and Netflix, to Nike, Starbucks, and Home Depot. The fund has some $18 million in assets, costs 50 basis points, and has returned almost 40% since launching 2 years ago. It's outperformed the broader market by about 5 percentage points, thanks to a big overweight in Netflix. MILN gets a green light in the Bloomberg Intelligence traffic light system because what you see is what you get, a long-only basket weighted by market cap.
I love the music. And Scarlett
83,000 clicks for
what?
That thing. Yeah.
Scarlett has great voiceover abilities. Have you been approached for voiceovers?
No, but I want that to be the thing I do after I retire.
Yeah. I mean, like, just sit back and, like, do voiceovers all day. I'd do
like
that.
Like Pixar movies or, like,
yeah,
for...
Yeah, she can do that.
Oh, anything. Okay. Yeah. Call me.
How about Eric just moves his mouth and then you can do voiceover for that?
By the way, did you like the shout out to the Bloomberg Intelligence traffic light system?
I did, Eric. You've hit the big time. Scarlett's talking about your traffic light system on your own show.
This is a good place for it, though. It's not crowbarred in.
It's
I think
perfect.
It fits nicely there. Because usually we're covering some far-out stuff.
It's called product placement.
You know, both of our kids come up with this one because the video...
Yeah.
Because when this comes on the weekend, occasionally my wife will watch it. And if my kids are around, they're bored. But sometimes the cartoon
catches
my 8-year-old can handle. He can actually go, that was kind of...
No, it's Scarlett's voice.
Yeah, well, that's probably what it is.
No, you know what it is? It's so funny. Speaking of the Bloomberg Intelligent Traffic Light System, my kids watch all the videos because I show it to them because, you know, we're looking at them every Monday and Tuesday before the show airs on Wednesday to make sure that the graphics are correct and everything. And they actually turned to me and they said, is there ever an ETF that scores a red light in the Bloomberg Intelligent Traffic Light System? Because we only get the ones that are green lights. And this is true. And I came back and we discussed how we can get some red light ones in.
Yeah. So the next week or the week after, we did FANG D.
Yeah.
Which is triple leveraged, just the FANG
inverse.
Plus some other stocks like Tesla. And it's inverse. Triple leverage inverse FANG. This thing is hard red. I mean, so we went all out and just to prove that, hey, we do cover the red lights.
Every once in a while.
That was a cool one, though.
The best ones.
And by the way, shout out to the art design team. When you see these, what they come up with is amazing. For the FANG D, they had this cobra in like neon. It looked like this, like a club, an ad for a cool club
downtown.
These
guys are waiting for you all week. It's like, oh yeah, now we get to do.
We did, another good one. I thought the video game one was amazing.
Gamer, that was the first one.
And then VCR.
Yes.
VCR, and they did like an old-school 80s-looking kind of format.
We have a tribe. We have a tribe. Scarlett, thanks so much for joining us on
Trillions. Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to Trillions. Until next time, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal, Bloomberg.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you like to listen. We'd love to hear from you. We're on Twitter. I'm at Joel Weber Show. He's at Eric Balchunas. You can find Scarlett at Scarlett Fu. Trillions is produced by Magnus Hendrickson. Francesca Levy is the head of Bloomberg Podcast. Bye.